Station number 23213, Wheel 5.
Major Potts, Wheel 5. I was asking you about choice of regiment.
You may well do. One was given, I remember this very well, they said, what are you have three choices of a rate of regiments. So I thought, well, where do I go? I hadn't really thought about it up to then. And it was obvious I was not going to join, say, the Brigade of Guards. I was not cut out for that. And I didn't want to, I couldn't think that I wanted to join a North Country regiment.
Couldn't go back to the Debenhams.
And I couldn't go back to the Debenhams, so where did I go? So I put down three regiments. I forget what regiments they were. But it's not where I ended up, I can tell you. And then a week, 10 days before commissioning, I was sent for, and my platoon commander said, you've been given a 5-year short service commission in the Ulster Rifles. And I couldn't think of a worse selection.
Why was that?
Well, I mean, I have no connection with Ireland. I have no history of Ireland in my blood.
You had done some training then.
Well, I'd done some training, but that didn't matter. So nearly every young officer and senior NCO in the army. Anyway, I said, OK, where are they? Being an ignorant sort of fellow. And he said, oh, they're on their way to Korea. I thought, oh my God, I don't want to go there.
Why didn't you want to go?
Oh, dangerous, you know. So anyway, you'll go and see the North Irish rep at Eton Hall. So I went along, and it was the quartermaster, a chap called George McCord, Mervyn McCord's father. So he said, oh, well, my son's on the way to Korea. He's the second lieutenant. Well, you better have an extra greatcoat because it's cold. He gave me a greatcoat. So I went along to the tailor, and the tailor said, oh, you want some black buttons and things like that. I didn't even know they were black buttoned.
You didn't know the difference between rifle regiments and...
Not really. Well, I did, but I didn't really pay much attention because I never thought I would end up there. So anyway, I was duly commissioned. You know, we had a parade and normal sort of thing, and I was sent on a fortnight's leave, or week's leave, I think, only a week. I only had 2 weeks' leave since I'd been in the country. And I was to report to Ballykinner. I've been to Ballykinner. That is the backside of everywhere.
What's wrong with Ballykinner, then? Is it town?
Well, it's near no town. It's on the coast, and it's a barren place. Anyway, I got the train, and I went over on the boat and caught a bus and got to Ballykinner. And then I joined the holding company, and they...
How did you receive when you arrived then?
Everybody was very friendly, you know. No problem. You mean with my other rank service? Nobody paid any attention as far as I could see. You see, I was commissioned on my 22nd birthday, which is actually younger than a lot of people being commissioned from Sandhurst. And I also had two pips because I'd done over 4 years other rank service.
So that counted to seniority?
Yeah, so I had two pips. I don't think anybody actually realised where I'd come from. You know, I'd appeared off a bus.
With a posting order.
With a posting order to Korea. Well, I joined the...
Who was in the holding company?
Because... Well, there was a company commander called... Crackers Wilson. And he really was Crackers. He was mad. He was an inner skilling. I remember once he said everybody could go on leave for a long weekend, but only those who had aircraft who lived in England. And if his colour sergeant came to the front door of his house to give him something, He used to open the door, shut the door, and say, "Tradesman round the back." He only died about a couple of years ago. He really was. He was a Bulgarian speaker. I think he had Bulgarian blood. And there was Busty McQuaid, who was the colour son. I shall never forget him. You could never get anything in the stores from Busty. Bicycles. He used to, all the bicycles had their front reel missing. And it was quite a long way, about 3/4 mile to the officer's mess. And I said, "Colour, can I have a bicycle, please?" "Certainly can't," he said. "They're all in for repair."
Every bicycle?
All the bicycles. That's why they got their wheels out. And so I said to the storeman, "Can't I have a bike?" "Whoa," he said, "more than my life's worth, give you a bicycle." Anyway, I was quite happy there, and I was told that I had to take the first line reinforcements career. There were three officers, a chap called Paul Docker, who's since dead, Hedley Craig, who went off his rocker, and me. And they said, "Oh, there are a whole lot of NCAs and things." It was quite a large draft, it was about 60 or 70.
How did you find the soldiers in the Royal Ulster Life?
They were a different bunch, you know. I was just fascinated with all these Irishmen with all their brogues, and very difficult to describe. They were a super lot of guys, and they thought I seemed to be all right. They didn't sort of. I don't think they knew my history at all. They knew I. When I first inspected them, I gave one or two of them a rough time. They were obviously trying it on. And I had a corporal. We had three sergeants and three corporals. Funnily enough, one of the sergeants is a sergeant at Chelsea Pensioners now. The other two are dead. And I had the famous Corporal Red Cushing as my... corporal. Now, Cushing had an extraordinary career. He wrote a book called Soldier for Hire. He started off at the age of 14. Do you want me to go on with it? Started off at the age of 14, and I'll abbreviate it. He joined the IRA as a messenger in Tipperary. He then decided to go to America. He joined the American Army. He fought for the Golden Gloves. He actually boxed the world champion. And I believe that he'd been in continual trouble. He overemphasized everything, stamping his feet, saluting, and everything else. But he was a good chap. And
how did you come to be in the Ulster Rifles if you'd been in America?
He left the American Army before the war. Yeah. It then transpired that he was captured about Dunkirk time. He was put into a concentration camp because they thought they might be able to make him as subversive against the British. And he was in a concentration camp with Stalin's son.
VIP concentration.
Yeah, so Cushing was there. And he was there when Stalin's son was shot. Cushing took the body out of the wire.
He tried to escape.
Oh, no, he'd been bloody-minded, I think. Anyway, Cushing, by this time, after the war, went to the Irish Fusiliers in Aqaba and was told to parade with all these medals. And when he appeared on parade, he had British medals, American medals. I'm not sure he didn't have an IRA medal as well. And the general stopped in front of him, nearly had epilepsy. We're Cushing was a corporal, but he volunteered for Korea. But he was 50 or thereabouts. And of course, he's far too old to go. But he was going.
This is ongoing.
Oh, yes, this is ongoing. So we went over to London, where the London Irish met us and played us in and that sort of thing. And the night before we caught the draft, or at Southampton caught the boat, Cushing said, "Do you mind if I go and see an old aunt tomorrow morning? She shouldn't see me for a long time. She lives in London," he said. "And I'll meet you at Waterloo Station." I said, "Okay." So when we arrived at Waterloo Station with the Irish pipers and everything, there was Cushing with what was then the tabloid press in front of him. And the following day, "Oldest soldier fights again. A loyal Irishman lays life down for Britain." Can you imagine? Front page of every paper. I thought, my God, I'm in for it now. Anyway, we got Cushing on the boat, and we had one or two frackers on the boat with the Irish.
What sort of frackers?
Oh, they all went ashore and beat up a cafe in Aden. And we got them to Japan to Kure. And Cushing got himself promoted immediately to sergeant, provost sergeant, and was told he wasn't going to Korea, he'd have to stay in Japan. 8 months later, I happened to be down at battalion headquarters. "Hello, sir," says Cushing. And there he was, dressed in American combat fatigues, a 4.5 strung low, an American carbine, with his big cigar. I looked, I trembled. And he was going to see the CO. The adjutant came and said, "Now, Cushing, Sergeant Cushing, you've got to come and see the CO now." And Cushing was marched in to see the CO. And it was a marquee. And one side was the adjutant, one side was the CO. So I go in the other side. This is going to be good.
Earwigging.
And Cushing goes in, and he said, "I want to join the battalion, sir." And the CO said, "I'm afraid your papers are marked. You're too old." "Oh," says Cushing, "sir, when a mule goes old in the army," says Cushing, "they take it out and shoot it. Sir, here's my pistol. Take me out and shoot me." Oh, my God, the RSM had epilepsy. Anyway, this is a story of Cushing, not my life. Anyway, he was put on a truck heading south. And I thought, well, that's the end of Cushing. Not at all. About 8 years later, who appears at Wuppertal, just as I'm about to leave, but Cushing. "Nice to see you, sir," he says. "Oh," I said, "nice to see you, Cushing. What's your job now?" "I'm advisor to the CO on nuclear biological warfare." I said, "You've been on a course, have you?" And he said, "Yes, sir." Anyway, that's what his job was, NBC officer, NCO.
He was still in the army.
Oh, still in the army, yeah. And anyway, he then he had a stomach ulcer that bust through rotten drink over the ages. And he went off to a Canadian hospital. And he returned about 2 months later with an American Canadian accent, saying he was half Canadian now because he had Canadian blood. And I left to go to the Marines, and Cushing obviously discharged. We trooped the colour in 1960, whenever it was. And all ex-inner skillings were asked to various messes to come, and they'd be accommodated. Cushing sends a message to the RSM to say that ex-Sergeant Cushing would be arriving at Gravesend Station at whatever time it was, and would he arrange to have a CO staff car to pick him up? And Cushing appeared, and he hasn't been, After that, nobody knows what happened to him.
He faded away.
He faded away. But he was known throughout the army. I've got an article about him. Extraordinary.
Was he an effective soldier?
Oh, yeah, he's a very good soldier. The soldiers liked him. He was good. I mean, he was. Every time he got into trouble, it was through the drinking. It was always the same excuse. Oh, I met a couple of my friends, he'd say. And what, you can't leave them on their own. You've got to have a wee bevy with them. End of story of Cushing. Well, he was one of my corporals to go to Korea. And as I say, he went with me. Ballykinler. I can't say very much about Ballykinler. It wasn't all that good a place. It was remote. The only place was Sandy's Soldiers' Home, where all the officers went for their coffee in the morning. We played a bit of sport. Saturday afternoons we had to go beagling because the North Irish Brigade had a pack of beagles. And, you know, it was the same as any other mess life in the early 50s, and that was it.
Where are all your soldiers? All your other soldiers also locals, are they Ulster men or Irish?
Well, I think two-thirds were Ulster. We didn't take any national service at that time. We did have national service later. And we got to, when we got to Japan, we started, Headley and I, started to train our soldiers. And there seemed to be no organization there. And I and Headley went off to Korea. Paul Docker came on later. The captain, but we didn't take any of the soldiers with us, or if we did, I can't remember it. And we went to the battalion, I think this was about February, and the battalion was just come out the line, and I was made most welcome.
What was there at Kure in Japan when you got
there? There was a hospital. And there was this reinforcement holding camp, which were old bashers. I think it most probably belonged to the Japanese army, or it might have belonged to the Australians who were in that area from the end of the war. It was jolly cold.
Any training grounds available?
There were training grounds. There was a battle camp up at Haramura, and we went up there for a bit of a period, I can't remember, week, I think. And the commandos were there, the Marines, training at the same time. And we're told to get on with it. I mean, we had no help, outside help from anybody.
You were devising your own training
program. Yeah, we did, yeah.
What did you concentrate on in that preliminary training?
We threw grenades, zeroed weapons. We didn't do any tactical stuff. It was too jolly cold. I didn't realise it was going to be colder when I got to Korea.
Have you done any training in mountain warfare at that stage?
No, I hadn't. I'd never done any training in mountain warfare as such. The hills in Korea were quite high. They were up to about 3,000 feet, but you could get up and down them, if you know what I mean.
They weren't too steep.
They weren't. Well, they were in places, but if we couldn't get there, the Chinese couldn't get there.
What did you know about Korea when you arrived in Japan? Had you had any briefings?
Well, no, we hadn't really. We had no briefing whatsoever on. Well, people said the capital of Korea is Seoul. I didn't know what to think. Didn't think anybody did. Of course, the war had been going on by the time I got there, 6 months or thereabouts, and the Chinese and the Americans had been running up and down the peninsula.
Did you know about all that history of recent operations?
Oh, we did, yes. Yes, we did, because it was in the paper, and but nobody ever lectured us on it.
So you depend on press.
Press reports, yeah. Again, you can imagine that many of the officers at the reinforcement depot were not of a very high caliber, and the sooner one got out of it, the better.
Were the soldiers keen to go to war?
Oh, some were. Some were reservists. Some of the people we took out with us jumped the ship when it sailed to go originally to Korea. We took them aboard in irons.
So they were obviously not keen to.
Well, about 30% were not terribly keen. I mean, we had chaps who had fought the Japanese, and one or two actually in the battalion, if I remember rightly, had been prisoners in Korea in during the war. So they weren't at all keen. No, we didn't know what to expect. I think we got off the ship. We were taken over on a ship. We went from Kure to Sasebo was the name of the place. And we were put on this old package. I mean, it had straw on the floor. And we all got in like a load of cattle, given a ration pack and told we'd be there tomorrow morning. And then when we got to Pusan, and we did have inoculations at Sasebo, we got to Pusan and we were put on a train to the forward maintenance area, which was Suwon, which was a 24-hour journey.
Did you get any sort of impression of Korea?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we went past this board which had, this is the tank that General Dean knocked out in whenever it was. It was pretty desolate. It stank. All I can say is Korea stank. Well, they used human excrement for their vegetables. It wasn't too bad in the winter, but it was awful in the summer. And most of the villages had been burnt or destroyed. Telegraph poles were down. There was no infrastructure. There was no electric light, there was no gas, there was no water. You name it, it wasn't there. And the roads, of course, by that time, had only been Murram roads, or perhaps the main road had been a tarmac road, but with the amount of vehicles that were used by the Americans, they'd just become tracks and become wider and wider as people tried to get out of the
going round
what? Yeah, that sort of thing.
Sounds like cattle drove.
Well, something like that. I mean, when we got to Suwon, it was pouring with rain, and the place was a quagmire. I mean, it was about a foot deep in mud. What was that Lee Marvin film with the miners? It was a bit like that, you know. It was ghastly. But luckily, we went to the British reception. There was a big thing with Union Jack, and we said, "Hey, we're here." And he said, "Oh, you're lucky, Ulster Rifles. There's a lorry from them over there." We went over to the lorry, and there was a rifleman. We said, "We're two new officers." I think we had about four. Yeah, we did. We had about four soldiers. And he said, "Oh, jump on. I'm going back to the battalion in a minute. Got what I've come for." And so we went back to the battalion. Arrived in the battalion, and
where were they?
They were there. I can't remember where they were. Aichon or somewhere. Not Incheon, Aichon. Anyway, they were in a village, town headquarters, and companies were out in other villages. And went in to see the adjutant, and he said, "Have you got any specialist training?" I said, "No, I hadn't." And Hedley Craig had been in the parachute regiment. He was much older than me. Well, much older, at least 2 years. So I was allocated a company, which was all right. And they said, "We'll ring them up and tell them to send in the jeep." And anyway, a jeep appeared, and I jumped on and went to company headquarters, and the company commander was a company 2IC, a chap called John Lane, very nice chap. I see him occasionally. And he was captain of about 25, 26. Been in the army about 7 or 8 years. Had been in the para, and been with the Ulster Rifles, and was in Palestine with them. The only other officer there was a chap called Houston Shaw Stewart. The proper company commander was in hospital in Japan, having been shot the last time they were in the line.
Was that been in
the
Happy Valley?
Happy Valley, known as Happy Valley. And it was after Happy Valley. I'm sorry, he was wounded. He was wounded going up to the hand by a sniper. And he was a chap called Chris Nixon. And anyway, John said, I think you better take over one platoon. So I went to one platoon. Half of them were reservists. Platoon sergeant was a reservist. I had a Corporal Bruce, ex-reservist, ex-Inner Skillings, North Africa and Italy. Corporal Watkinson, ex-Chindit. And Corporal Dutchy Pierce, Northwest Frontier of India.
Obviously, a highly experienced.
Oh, very good. And half the platoon were reservists.
Was the platoon up to strength?
I think it more or less was, yes. May have been not War Office strength, but I should say we had about 28 or 30 in the platoon. Maybe not quite as much.
What sort of physical and mental condition were they in when you joined them?
They were in pretty good nick, actually. Surprisingly, they'd been, some of them were, of course, reinforcements after Happy Valley, which I haven't mentioned because I wasn't there. And some had come out from England. Certainly, all the NCOs had come out with the battalion from the UK. And my platoon sergeant was... I never got on with him terribly well as a person, but he was efficient, and he did me very well.
What was his background?
2nd Battalion of the Ulster Rifles, Northwest Europe. Ended up in Austria, and you know what the other ones' backgrounds were.
So your sergeant and your corporals were all experienced?
Oh yes, very experienced bunch. I've never had such a bunch again, and I have actually, Corporal Bruce then came to the Inner Skillings, and he finished his service as a colour sergeant. Very good, reliable man.
What were they actually doing when you joined them? Were they in defensive
position? No. They were in this village, we're behind the line, and they were, I suppose you would call it rest and recuperation. Doing very little. Smoking and drinking as much as I beer as they could get hold of. I wasn't there. We then went off. That's what happened. We then went off and dug some positions around the various places, defense positions. And they were layback positions. I'm not certain if we were ever to use them.
Were these reserve positions then?
Reserve positions. But it was some miles away we were taken.
What was the terrain like in the area where you dug?
Well, where we were, the village was all right. I mean, that was paddy, frozen paddy. Where we dug it, it was scrub country. Difficult, but once you got down... it was fairly sandy actually, and as it was in most of Korea.
Were you able to clear or obtain clear fields of fire?
Yes, oh yes.
Do that. Was this a question of clearing away the scrub?
Oh, Caraway Scrub.